Reflects the position of the management and staff of Guardian Networks. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Networks.
Good yawning this morning, and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It is Wednesday, the 21st of February, 2024, and we welcome the day with Shine 242 with My Bahamas, another classic produced for the 50th Independence season. We say thank you, Shine, for continually adding to the catalog of our lives. It's a Wednesday. That means it's a Man Down Mash Up a Wednesday. Today we're mashing up not just the two shows, but we're mashing a guest in here as well. Joining us today is a representative from the Organization for Responsible Government. And then after that conversation, we're delving into the papers. There's lots and lots of news, continuing conversations from the top of the week. But I want to draw your attention to today's Nassau Guardian. If you don't have the Guardian, you can also pick up the Tribune and find it in there. Turn to page A11 in the Nassau Guardian. There's an official proclamation claiming Saturday, the 24th of February, 2024, as 242 Day. It's on its way this Saturday, February the 24th, because every 24th day of the second month is 242 Day. Show your Bahamian pride, fly your Bahamian flags, wear Bahamas flag colors, eat Bahamian foods, create and listen to Bahamian music, donate in sequences of 242, do something 242 times, 2.42 times, 24.2 times, and merchants consider using the 242 sequence for pricing items on that special day. It's going to be a good day. I'm hoping that tomorrow, for the rest of the week, we're celebrating 242 Day. On Saturday again this year, we're celebrating 242 sports on Friday, and we're going to be doing a little 242 culture tomorrow. I got a text that says the song sounds a lot like Just 'Cause She Fat to me. There's like, I think they call that like maybe an interpolation, right? Where you don't actually sample, like you don't pull the track out, but it's an interpretation of it, I think. I just like it. I mean, I think it's an anthem, you know, and it joins the number of anthems produced for our 50th Independence celebration. Joining us this morning is Mr. Stephen Evans from the Organization of Responsible Governance. So for the first part of the show, we're talking governance. In the second part of the show, we're talking politics. Good morning, Mr. Evans. How are you doing?
Good morning. I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Everybody at Org is okay?
Everyone is doing well. Thanks.
Good stuff. Good stuff. I miss y'all.
Yes, yes, yes. You are in our 2024 plan, so please.
Governance. We are usually looking at the ways that politics impacts governance.
Yes.
But we also want to look at the systems that make up governance.
Absolutely.
And not just critique the politicians that operate them, but the systems themselves.
Right.
And so a big part of talking politics is understanding the systems of governance that politicians are responsible for.
Yeah.
As Go on.
Well, I mean, and the reality is our culture has created this landscape where the two seem to be conflated into one. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about two very, very, very different structures. From my own perspective, I have never really been into politics, which typically shocks people when they think about where I work. And I am still trying to figure out the who is who and the who did what at what point, because my focus has always been on the structures that exist that run the country, not independent of, completely of politics, but definitely they do exist in and of themselves. And helping people to understand the difference, I think, is the way forward. Because if we don't get that there are the people, but then there is the structure, and they are two different systems, we'll probably be stuck in the same place for a very long time.
And I think a lot of us are sort of stuck trying to understand how political culture, the way that politicians operate, becomes a barrier to the fulfillment of policy, right?
Right.
Becomes a barrier to the success of policy or the enforcement of policy.
Right.
What I miss most of all, sir, is access parliament.
Oh, yes.
Right? Where a team within org would follow the parliamentary schedule, alert citizens as to what's next on the parliamentary agenda, and provide brief synopsises and context for the conversations taking place in the House.
Yeah, it's really good that you actually bring that up, because it's something that we plan to revitalize in 2024. And I'm actually happy to share we've been working directly with the Parliament, and with the passage of the Parliamentary Services Bill, there are portions of it that speak to allowing NGOs to assist with public education. So we're trying to forge formal relationships, because shout out to Tate, who went off to get his master's degree. And he definitely held the fort down with Access Parliament for us. But the reality is, behind the scenes, it is a challenge to keep up with what's going on. And you have to kind of know people and have contacts in order to get the information, which isn't sustainable from our perspective. But we definitely applaud the direction that the government is moving in terms of making more information readily available and forming partnerships. And we are in talks about potentially even producing a series that could be shared on the parliamentary channel in partnership with the Parliament to sort of take Access Parliament to the next level this year. So
absolutely. It would be great as a bill is being discussed.
Right.
Right. If you have a split screen,
yes,
the bill is being discussed, you could list the prior bills, like maybe this bill is replacing a bill. Maybe this bill is an amendment, which is replacing parts of an existing bill. You could talk about the stakeholders, constituents, or sectors of society that are impacted by the bill or that the bill provides for. You can list the NGOs that work on the issues being addressed by the bill.
Right.
And then you can link viewers to ministries and agencies that house statistics or information about the work that takes place around the bill, right? So if it's finance, regulations, bill, then you could say, listen, well, Inland Revenue is one place. Ministry of Finance is one place you're going to go. Social Services is one place you're going to go, because they collect the statistics that are used to determine how much money may be needed within this next period.
Yeah, and I think another thing that's really key for us is it's a step toward more formal public consultation. So on the, I guess on the official books, the space in which a bill should be circulated for public commentary is during the second reading. And there, at this point, isn't necessarily a formal process to what that is supposed to look like. So if a bill is of public interest and we know that it will impact the wider public, for example, then they really should have a say on what that looks like and have the opportunity before it's passed to give their feedback. So we're also hoping through that and the Policy Review Center, which is sort of like the sister initiative of Access Parliament that is still up and running, that in addition to the information you talked about, which would be phenomenal to display, we can show people where it's at. Like, is this where it was introduced? Is it in the second reading? Is it in the Senate?
Right.
So they know that this is your opportunity to go and send your feedback.
Yes.
So that it can be incorporated into, hopefully incorporated into the debates. It's a slow and steady process, but it's the gold standard of public consultation.
Absolutely. And it's a benefit for NGOs, citizens, and government actors and agencies alike. It's also a profound benefit for politicians.
Yes, yes.
Right? It is a source of information that you can use to create a narrative.
Yes. I'm so glad you said that, because one of the things that, as I said, being newer to politics and trying to learn as quickly as I can, I'm like, this stuff helps. You know what I mean? Like, if you want to really represent the voice of the people, you want, for example, people to vote for you or to be happy for you, what better way than to listen to them? Mm-hmm. You know, to listen to what they have, especially on the family islands, but throughout the country, right? When we do this, it's not a threat to anyone. When the Bahamian people recognize their ability to influence policy and to positively contribute, and it's really support. Now, there may be criticism or critique that's constructive so that the thing actually works for me, but I think this can facilitate a shift of the culture that feedback is something that is a threat to political structures, because the only thing that feedback will really do is strengthen. It may be discomfort. It may require change. It may require progressive ways of thinking. No pun intended. But...
And it's information that you probably can't pay for.
Right.
Why would you block it? Why would you deter it or discourage it? It's a whole report without having to pay a consultancy fee, right?
Precisely.
Mr. Evans, we got a caller on the line. Let's go to this call. They seem eager to join the conversation. Good morning, caller.
Morning, Mr. Evans.
Good morning.
Very quickly here, I think this is where the important office of the ombudsman comes in.
Yes.
It's too many times that bills have been tabled and passed in our parliament without the people participating in or having their voices heard, because we are the ones out here who's being impacted by these bills that's being passed. And I think that is the missing component. It is so sad that successive governments have not found it necessary to create the office of ombudsman for us to have our voices heard. And so this is something that a lot of us out here would like to see going forward. Any government that allows the voices of the people to be heard officially, I think that is a government for the people.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you very much, Carlo. We're going to get into definitely a sort of a follow-up on Organization for Responsible Government's campaign.
Mm-hmm.
For an ombudsman act, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what we were talking about just now, and thank you again, caller. We're going to speak specifically to
Absolutely.
The ombudsman's
very,
bill.
Very, very important point.
And the status of it in a moment. Another reason why the government should consider creating an environment of transparency and accountability through reinforcing systems that allow citizens to access information. We're looking at, and I'm sure we're going to talk about it a bit more today, the Bahamas is going to space. I mean, Aisha Bo is going to space, and she's taking all us in her Georgie bundle. But we're venturing into space tourism, and I really want to talk about it. I'm extremely excited about it. And when I raise the subject, a lot of people sort of cut their eye and say, you're getting ready to object, right? You're getting ready to oppose. And I say, well, listen, I do have a critical interrogation about the seeming lack of transparency around this activity, right? But it's not because I want to say, well, you can't do it unless you ask the Bahamian people. The point I want to make is that you need to give Bahamians an opportunity to prepare themselves, to build capacity, to be able to be stakeholders in any initiative taking place in their own country.
Yeah.
Now, so somebody can say, well, but, I mean, there's Aisha Bo, and then where's the next astronaut, Aaron? It's not necessarily at that level that we're expecting participation. One of the elements of this partnership that's being touted is the creation of an exhibition where a SpaceX suit will be on display. apparently it would be the first exhibition of this nature outside of the continental USA, right? And I'm thinking to myself, well, remember the astronaut that says that his favorite time of the day is when he's sitting over the Bahamas?
Mm-hmm.
I would, as a Bahamian, like an opportunity to be able to participate in the creation and operation and policy creation within this exhibition. I want to have an opportunity to curate an exhibition, a part of this exhibition. I want an opportunity to say Travolta Cooper, Lovato Stubbs, Maria Govan, Kareem Mortimer, Johnny Cake, all my new and upcoming filmmakers, Nat the filmmaker, Moya Thompson, who's in charge of the film division in the Division of Culture in the Ministry of Youth, Sports, and Culture. Let's run a campaign. We need space documentaries. We need young Bahamians imagining Bahamians in space, right? We need every movie we could create. We need a documentary about experiences with UFOs and what they call them now, unidentified aerial phenomenon, UAPs. This is what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And so knowing where the legislation is, knowing the timeline, knowing who the actors are, knowing what requirements, what certifications are required by law to be able to participate. These are the things that Bahamians need to not just support the government and whatever policy initiative it's taking up, but to grow a legacy for themselves, create new careers, create new industries. And, you know, that's how it works. And so it's not always about a complaint. It's about an opportunity to grow and expand.
Yeah, and I think this kind of shows up in a lot of the ways that decisions are being made. It is seldom just, this is just so bad. We just hate it. We don't want to see it. But to your point, when I looked at the story, and admittedly, this is something I'm not like 100% well-versed on, but I've been following some of the developments, and a lot of the comments I've seen, particularly on social media, people are asking who is going to benefit, who's going to be able to participate. And while I wouldn't want to get too much into that specifically, your point is the way that we make sure, regardless of what the thing is, if you talk to the people, if you look at who you have, if you create opportunities for people to say, yes, I think I have the expertise or skill or something that can be of benefit to this process, and you incorporate that feedback into the development of the policies that will govern this thing. So when it does happen, we're not looking back and thinking, well, wow, how did we get to this point where so very few are benefiting? This is the point where we bring people in and we talk to people to make sure that, you know, maybe you didn't even know that there was this community of filmmakers, up and coming, or folks that would be able to capitalize or create business ventures based on this new development. And consultation is the way to make sure that at least you give the opportunity for people to come forward. And on the other side of things, we have to be careful about what we call complaining, because we're calling for citizen accountability as well. That means that when the opportunities come, we have to step up and take them. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of us as Bahamians, we're jaded because we feel like things have just been going the same way since the beginning. Like things aren't going to change. It doesn't make sense for me to come out to that public meeting or fill out that survey or lend my opinion to a particular conversation. So then the decisions are going to continue to be made without you. And then when you have major, potentially exciting developments like this, will continue to be left out. So it's sort of like a meeting in the middle where those consultative opportunities need to be created. And we kind of have to shake ourselves because it's frustrating with all of the other things that are going on and say, yeah, I'm going to come out because I can benefit from this thing. I know that my perspective is valuable. Or I know someone that probably has expertise that can be lent to this process. And in the absence of that, we're going to come out very likely with similar things where we're trying to fix it and make it benefit people after it's already happened. And that's not negative. That's just the way that things progress when you don't do it on the front end.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm going to be starting my UFO tour shortly.
Right.
It's going to be a multi-island, a multi inter-island destination tour.
Okay.
We're going to look for aliens. and the tour will...
I hope you don't find them.
I mean, that's the plan. I will just be honest with you. The plan is not to find them and not for them to find us. But I'm thinking this is what people want. They say, listen, I'm not going to open a 4-star hotel to be able to participate in this market, but I'm prepared to take these two boats I have, refurbish them, mm-hmm. turn them into tour guide boats, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. be going on the ocean every night looking for aliens in the sky. It's going to be a tourism product, right? And so, but to really, to be sustainable,
right.
and to ensure that I'm not interfering with, right?
I
don't become a problem,
right,
that I'm not, you know, going opposed to policy
right.
and existing mm-hmm. rules, I need to know what is the environment that I'm trying to enter.
And that's what happens. That's what happens when we try to capitalize on opportunity. We saw a lot of it with COVID, and we mm-hmm. don't understand COVID is not the best example because we were making decisions in a very, very, very unprecedented sort of environment from a policy perspective. But people who had viable business ideas were finding themselves in problems because this policy landscape was created in the absence of any sort of communication or consultation. Like I said, I'm not taking a swing at that because it was a public emergency. But that is how a lot of countries work. It's not just us.
Right.
We're just making the decisions, making the policy. People then see the opportunity on the back end, try to capitalize, and then they're not in compliance right. with the law.
And I'll give you that critique, right? It was a public emergency. But then I'm gonna raise you one and say, but I can't sit on that critique because Dorian is a global emergency.
Right, right.
We experience things like this all the time. And we're only 400,000 people, mm-hmm. right? And so the truth is, we're punching below our weight.
You're right.
Right? We're punching below our weight, and we should have been prepared.
I think so.
But this is the type of the things that org is advocating for.
Absolutely.
I'll be honest with you all, I'm not certain about that grammar. We're on midterm break. Take a bye. We'll help the government to operate more efficiently
right.
and more effectively.
Right.
Absolutely. Now, I got a text here. It is a very heavy critique. It says, Ms. Green, I don't believe nothing until I see it. It's hard for the opposition to get questions answered from the government, who they are supposed to give answers to. What you think about your questions in there, they can't even get access to nothing unless somebody decides they can leak something. I would not believe nothing these people say. Come on. Oh, nothing these people come on the radio saying. Now, dear Texter, this is not a representative of the government.
No, yeah.
This is a representative of an NGO, a non-governmental organization.
Right.
A civil society organization that is advocating for more responsible government.
Right. So, and if I could just clarify. So at the Organization for Responsible Governance, the name could sort of, because of the culture, the name in itself gives a particular impression that we represent government. So we are an NGO, like Aaron said, we are a neutral, objective body. And our mission is to promote the principles of good governance across the sectors.
Mm-hmm.
Government is the primary decision maker for the country. And so they will always be at a particular place in making sure that the sectors can function together. But we do our work in the private sector with civil society or other nonprofits as well. And we have a keen focus on self-governance, the way that citizens participate in processes, are educated, are empowered, and live just, sustainable lives and livable lives in the Bahamas. So anything that we put forward is based on data, information, feedback, and commentary from the public, from the other sectors, and even discussions with government, from conferences and international studies as well. And we craft, particularly when we talk about policy, we craft positions that we advocate with government to help us reach these gold standards of good governance that are very defined. It's not an opinion-based. We get up and we think it would be better. There are 8 defined standards of good governance. Many of them have already come up: accountability, transparency, effectiveness and efficiency, inclusion and representation, participatory, following the rule of law. And we have standards for each of those 8 areas that we sort of promote. And that's why when particular topics come up, you may see a release from us, or we may do the media rounds to talk about what we can do.
Before we move on to the status of the Ombudsman's Bill, have any political parties reached out to org or contracted your services to support their candidate training programs or to provide training opportunities for candidates and party members?
Not directly. We're typically proactive in that space leading up to elections, where we focus heavily on citizen education with a keen interest on empowering young voters. But we also do typically send out communications, letters, and information on the standards of good governance and hunkering down on the need for more public consultation. So we've gotten positive responses from all parties, independent candidates and third parties from our communications, typically speaking. We would love to do formal training around some of these things. Generally speaking, in my time, we have not, but I will definitely say we do send out those communications and resources regularly, and they're typically okay to well received.
All right.
Yeah.
Status of the Ombudsman's Bill. Will we see it before 2026?
It looks like we may. I know that it was passed in the House, I know that it was...
Lower and upper, or just lower?
It was passed in the lower House.
Okay.
Yes. So I am not sure when it came up in the Senate. I know that it was slated to be debated in the Senate. So it does look like we should have some progress on that. But the important thing that we always put forward, because we've seen this with freedom of information, where something is fully passed but not fully enacted, is two things. The first is that we need to consult with the public. The ombudsman will establish an office of someone who can be somewhat of a public defender. When there is malpractice or maladministration of a government official, the office of the ombudsman will create a space where people can have their complaints heard in a safe and objective space. It makes provisions for many proceedings to be able to take place. But as with any bill, will it work for family islanders, for example? Will it work for people who are typically discriminated against? Does it provide resources for public education so folks can understand, where do I go and how do I access it? And those things, no matter how many clauses we put in beforehand, will not be effective unless we consult with people. And the second thing is when we see something like this passed, we have to see the budget allocation to make sure that the office can be established, the necessary staff can be hired and trained, and any technology, because we're moving into this age where let's get the tech first instead of having to do digital transformation. We have a great opportunity, but technology costs a lot of money. So
Absolutely.
We need to see that reflected in the budget.
And we're seeing that issue arise with the enforcement of the provisions of the Freedom of Information
Yes.
Act, without a doubt. Let's go to the phone line. Good morning, caller.
Hey, good morning, Ms. Green.
Morning,
good
sir.
Good morning, yes.
Good morning.
Yeah, I'm just chiming in on the conversation. And, of course, I'm ecstatic to hear the word ombudsman and what this young man is saying, right?
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I just wanted to know what this intrude or move over or this model would be. I mean, let's call it, let's say, malpractice with the doctors, right? Or would this include that, like a scientific ombudsman? Will you have that model where I'm dissatisfied with something in the health industry? And yeah, that's what I'm saying is, would this cover that? Because I have a problem with paying for a blood test and then waiting to see the doctor to get the results, right? And so I'm not knocking the doctors down, but what I'm saying is, it's like insulting someone's intelligence, because, of course, what harm could it be to email me or WhatsApp me the results, and then the date for the doctor could be way down the line, and I want to get my blood test results to do my own intervention. So what I'm saying is, it's like more like a dictatorship to me, because with the Google or the information overload, I can go and see, or even on the blood test, you can see the parameters of what it is and what it should be. And what is safest to the right, you'll see the parameters, whether it be in micrograms, whatever it be. It can't do any harm. if you just email me my own results. So if I go to a private clinic, then and I should be able to walk into a private clinic and without a doctor and say, I want to do this particular blood test. What is going on in this country? I can't. You see what I'm saying? You get what I'm saying? It's because I paid for a blood test in a government clinic, in the clinic, but they telling me I have to wait to see the doctor to get the results. Which, and I have to see the doctor anyhow, but why can't I use, what harm could that do?
And
I'll just hang up and listen.
Absolutely, 52, thank you. Now, so I'm not sure the ombudsman would be able to deal with matters arising within the Ministry of Health and Wellness.
Right.
But not necessarily a medical ombudsman that deals with specific issues.
Well, I mean, I think that if it is a government service, it's not off limits, right?
Right.
So I know that I think the challenge comes in where in these individual instances, define malpractice is. Because if that's a standard practice, for example, in the public and the private sector, I've experienced it in both
right.
arenas. It might be difficult.
Right. The conversation then is held in a different arena.
Right.
And so if it's not malpractice.
Or maladministration.
Right. So if it's not malpractice, is it maladministration?
Right.
And if it's not malpractice or maladministration, does it mean now that stakeholders in the medical community now come together for a conversation about the protocols around this practice?
Right.
Because
right.
the issue 52 raises is if I pay for the blood test, who does the results, who do the results belong to? Do the results belong to me?
Right.
Or do they belong to the doctor?
Right.
Right? With the access to technology, I no longer need a doctor necessarily to determine what these results are saying. And then if I'm in the public health care system, how long do I have to wait
right.
to get results
right.
that
right.
I've paid for,
mm-hmm.
right? And then what if it is a matter of urgency? What if it turns out that waiting 6 weeks, waiting 8 weeks was detrimental to my health status?
Right, yeah. So with health specifically, I think those sorts of things can get a little bit tricky.
Right.
But to your point, finding the place where it's most appropriate to have those sorts of conversations is the way to go. And mm-hmm. in any arena, because once again, like I said, we advocate for private sector, but if it is a private industry or something that should be handled through the courts, it wouldn't be incorporated into the process of the ombudsman, just for example.
Right.
But we would still say that consultation, even in those private spaces or in matters that impact a lot of people just because of the way that it's set up, we do encourage for those conversations to be had between service providers and the people.
Absolutely.
And I did get a message that it was passed in the Senate. So we
okay.
have it officially on the books.
Has it been signed, assented to by the Governor General, and has it been gazetted yet?
That, find out.
But I'm just saying, laying out the process, right?
And if I could add to that,
yeah.
Will we see that incorporation in the budget? Will we understand that the funding required is actually being allocated to make this thing work?
Absolutely. Absolutely. On the other side of the break, we're going to talk about the Young Leaders Plastic Challenge.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I'm being joined this morning by Stephen Evans from the Organization for Responsible Government, and we're talking about the work that they do in helping citizens understand governance and their role in it. You guys stay tuned to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. We'll be right back.
It's that time of year to join the movement. It's time for the annual Guardian Media's Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise Fair, Saturday, March 2nd at the Mall of Marathon, starting at 10 a.m. Admission is free. Come and receive free health screenings by the walk-in clinic, fantastic product info, and sound financial advice. Participate in the exercise demonstrations by Natasha Brown, Outdoor Fitness Bahamas, and RFX. There will also be a CPR demonstration by Superior Care, plus live performances by Blaudy, Johnny Cake, Shine, and Carrington McKenzie, ending with a Saxon superstar Junkanoo Rush Out. Join the movement. It's the annual Nassau Guardians Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise Fair, Saturday, March 2nd at the Mall of Marathon.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Good morning and welcome back, Mr. Evans. I almost didn't start the show just now. I love that song. Listen, we are this week remembering the loss of Priscilla Rollins, right? As we lead into 242 Day. We're looking for songs to put on the podium next to Independence Morning. Mm-hmm. It's like a baby morning. And My Bahamas is on its way to that podium, along with Golden Anniversary Bahamas by Elkin 360. I just love that song. I love that song. But let's get to it. Two topics before we end the show. Public trust surveys and the Young Leaders Plastic Challenge. Now, first thing I see is grade 10 through 12, so I jealous.
Yes.
Let's talk about the challenge.
Yeah, so when we talk about citizen accountability, just very quickly, we typically split that into three things. So we public education is where heavy focus is because we can reach more people and just give them information and take in information about what it means to be a Bahamian, what your role is, and how does my everyday life chart a course for my country. Public consultation, we talked a lot about that, is where we're taking in information and sharing it with the relevant stakeholders. But this is our public participation, because we're a small team, we don't have as great a capacity to do this all the time. But we take on projects that demonstrate, okay, so when you get that education, when you're an engaged citizen, what are some of the things that you can do? And through a partner organization out of Barbados, who's doing sort of a regional project, we have this Plastic Tide Turners Challenge, which encourages young people to consider their role in combating plastic pollution and at large climate change and environmental conservation.
Right.
So we're running this pitch competition in addition to some general outreach that we'll be doing with some high schools here in New Providence. We're running nationally this pitch competition where students from 10th to 12th grade have the opportunity to, I want to say, win $500, but it isn't just like a gift. So they can get up to $500 in funding to run an environmental project on their school campus that tackles plastic pollution. Okay. It's found on our website at orgbahamas.com/plasticchallenge. And anyone from any school can enter. If you're a young leader and you're passionate about making a difference, or if you're listening and you know a teacher or a student in 10th to 12th grade anywhere in the Bahamas that might be interested, they can visit the site. And what they will, we have all the information and resources there to help guide them. And they'll create a small team of students and one teacher on their campus, brainstorm an idea, and submit that to us. We'll judge that. And then we're going to be having an actual pitch night where our top 10 entrants will be able to come before a panel of judges to talk about their project. And three winners will be selected to actually enact their project on their campus. It really gives them the opportunity to put on display leadership.
All right. And it is a campus-based project, right?
Yes, it's a campus-based project.
The project is to be operated on the campus or in the operated on the campus or from the campus?
Yes. So, okay. And on the campus is self-explanatory, but from the campus is a good point. I know that we'll be open to submissions for students that want to involve their school and something in its surrounding community as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we promote active citizenship, which is the key term that we've used at org to describe a citizen that is engaged, the idea is we always want to start with our community. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people of all ages, and I think when we get passionate about a thing, we're all a little bit guilty of running really, really quickly out of the gate, going straight to government, going straight to the top and trying to just shift the entire country. But the reality is, there's that saying, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together.
Mm-hmm.
We want to create an environment where people understand, I got to start at home. I got to start at my school. I need to start in my immediate community and space. So we were really excited to be able to run this Plastic Tide Turners project here in the Bahamas, because it is happening throughout the Caribbean in different iterations. And this is our version of empowering people to start at their community level to take a stand against pollution. And, you know, as an environmentalist, I'm particularly happy to be able to take on this project after having stepped away from that space for the last few years to work on the good goal of governance. But this is a really great, great crossover point where we can take our citizen engagement initiatives and marry it with something that empowers young people to take a stand for a very, very beautiful country.
Listen, dear young people, because I know some of y'all still on midterm break. Before we had the plastic ban legislation that required us to incorporate biodegradable and eco-friendly bags and get rid of the non-recyclable plastic.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all go on YouTube. There's one video there where they show you how to take the bags and iron them together, apply heat to them, and they turn into mats, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you could turn them not just into mats for your car when you go to the beach to keep the sand out of your interior and your upholstery, but you could make cutting boards. You could make conch salad, like temporary cutting boards that you sell to tourists who want a little keepsake of their time in the Bahamas. They won't go home and pretend like they're making conch salad, right? Like, there are all kinds of things we could be doing. We could be taking empty water and soda bottles and turning them into walls, using them as part of structure for walls, for community gardens in the school, or semi-permanent raised beds for agricultural products in the school or in the community, you know, which is something sturdier than a wooden raised bed that could be blown down in the wind, right?
Yep.
All kinds of things.
Yeah, and I'm glad you said that, because I think when we think plastic pollution, and there's nothing wrong with cleanups. I'm a huge cleanup fan, but typically that's where we run to. A cleanup on the school campus. If anyone is hearing this and wants to do a cleanup because your school desperately needs it, that is totally fine.
Yeah.
But there are so many other things that could be done. And if I might say, even with the plastic ban, if you look at the story behind how that happened, shout out to Crystal Ambrose, who is the director of Bahamas Plastic Movement. She really, really gave a huge push along with students from Saudi Luthra. And they were instrumental in not just cleaning up the beaches of Eleuthera, but getting that legislation in place. So many people thought that that would never happen. And while there are, so we still have a really long way to go, it shows the power that, you know, young people and people of all ages, when we come together, you know, and we channel that youthful energy that is not needed by the way that the world is, we can really do some incredible things. And that's one of the reasons we're super excited about this project.
So from plastic upcycling, recycling and upcycling to mechanisms to pull plastics out of harbors, out of the ocean, out of creek systems, all kinds of ideas are welcome, eh?
Yes, that's
wonderful. I mean, I'm just so jealous. Y'all 10th through 12th graders take advantage of this and bring younger members of the school on board, right? Just because you are the person leading the project doesn't mean you can't get younger students involved as well.
Absolutely. I think that's a really important point, because when we definitely want to highlight the ability, because it's a project and we're going to take these things in phases just by the nature of the way that we do our work, we have to start somewhere. But there is so much that can be done, and there are so many that the passion of young people, as someone who's worked in youth development directly and indirectly for my entire career, it is just something that is incredible. And for anyone that thinks that this is really an opportunity, even to add to you, to say that I took a stand and I did something unique and I got other people involved, this is a great opportunity to make an impact in your community and in your environment, and to bring others along with you as you do that.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, public trust surveys.
Oh, the good stuff. So to touch really quickly, in all of this conversation, one of the things that brings it together, at ORG, one of our goals is to build bridges so that we can combat this concept that citizens taking a stand means opposition to the powers that be. It's a collaboration. We want to build bridges between citizens and government with things like Access Parliament and the Policy Review Center, so that when laws are made, for example, everyone is a part of the process. But there are obstacles to that. It's not just us being jaded or upset or the marginalized communities having to deal with daily challenges that we take for granted. But in addition to that, what we find is there are other factors that influence our desire to partner with and collaborate with. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of global studies that look at trends in declining public trust. So we're funding from the Templeton Religion Trust. Basically, we have been running this project to do surveys and focus groups, understanding Bahamians' relationship with trust in their government. And our initial findings are that we have a long way to go, but we have these public trust surveys available on our website at orgbahamas.com/community survey, where we look at the factors of trust building in the Bahamas so that we can create a list of recommendations on what the government can do and what the people can do, as well as civil society and the private sector, to build more trust in the first place so that initiatives that we put forward can be successful.
orgbahamas.com community survey.
Yes.
Let me repeat it. Org, O-R-G,
surveys.
bahamas.com/community survey. Your feedback is so important. In fact, we've developed a culture that's anti-feedback. We've developed a culture where people feel insulted. They feel publicly shamed. If you give them feedback, or if you attempt to engage them in any troubleshooting exercise to attain what we call feedback.
Yeah.
Right? And so it's important to shift that culture for us to make it accessible, state actors accessible, so that people will give feedback, because that's the resource that you run on.
Right.
If you're a politician, your motor runs on feedback.
Yes. Yes, it does.
You know? And here are civil society organizations attempting to support that function. Miss y'all. Everybody at Org, we miss y'all.
Yes, and we would love to have some more discussions on public trust, because we're going to be doing this for the next year. So if folks stay plugged in.
Yeah. So do me a favor. Let's track the status of the Ombudsman Act.
Yes.
Right? It's been passed in the Senate. I guess we're now awaiting assent from the Governor General for it to be gazetted,
yes.
Announce the date of enforcement, and any reservations, anything that's not being enforced, we need to be aware of.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Stephen Evans. We are all out of time.
It's been great.
Absolutely. Come back soon.
We will.
Bring the rest of them set.
We got to meet the new team.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's refreshing as well. Org is also modeling succession plans.
Yes.
And continuity.
Yes.
Right? But people change, but policy remains the same.
Absolutely.
So thank you very, very much to the listening audience and to the texters. Thank you for joining the conversation. You guys will be back soon.
Yes, we will. Thank you, everyone.
Listen, stay tuned. Guardian Radio AM and CA Newry is second half of the Wednesday Man Down mashup session. Steph and I had nothing to mash y'all up on. Better luck next time. We'll be right back, Bahamas.